Moving on to our next guest, Mark Wheat's with us now. He's General Counsel at Advancing American Freedom. He's with us now to talk about an important court case in the Eighth Circuit. Hey, Mark, welcome to the court.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, Mark, before we jump into this topic of the Linmar School District case on pronouns, gender pronouns, that you guys have been involved in with an amicus brief and other items, tell us a little bit about your organization.
Well, Advancing American Freedom is basically what the title says. We are a classically conservative organization that advances policy initiatives that expand freedom for all Americans. It was established by Vice President Pence right after the last administration, and we represent approximately 140,000 members.
Let me ask you this, Mark. Let's jump into this court case that you guys have been involved in one degree or another. But this is out of Iowa. This is the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals as far as the most recent ruling on this. But this Linmar School District and the policy that had to do with pronouns, people's pronouns, and really diverting away from one's biological God-given sex and starting to use these fake pronouns. Set this up for us. Bring us up to speed on what this case had to do with and how it originated.
Well, we found out about this about a year ago, and we filed an amicus brief with quite a number of conservative organizations, because what we thought was amazing about this policy in the Linmar School District is that it helped children to transition from one gender to the other without notifying parents. So a key element of this policy, which we thought was quite astonishing, is it keeps the district's action secret from the student's parents. And then it punishes other students who do not use the student's preferred pronoun. And we couldn't believe that this was a policy that was happening in America. And once we started down this road to fight it, we discovered that there are many other examples like this throughout the United States. And we have filed in cases in Massachusetts and Florida. There are ways that your listeners can find out if their school district has a similar policy, because their children may be assisted in transitioning without their parents' knowledge, and we don't even know of all the schools who have adopted these policies. But what is encouraging is that the Eighth Circuit, working in coordination with the Iowa State Legislature, restored parents' rights. And it's one of the few points of cheer that we can celebrate, where things are moving in our direction on this really problematic example of cultural dysfunction.
Yeah, it truly is cultural dysfunction, and it's coming from some of these school districts, which is very disturbing, because historically speaking, in America, public education was actually an idea of our founding fathers. We've had public education and publicly available schools since the very actually before the founding of America. If you go back, and the central textbook was the Bible. So this whole idea that God can't be in schools and we can't teach biblical morality in our schools is absolutely a farce. But nonetheless, here we are today, and the exact opposite is happening. Immorality is being promoted by some of these school districts. It's very, very disturbing. Where do you see this headed? Do you feel like this Eighth Circuit ruling and what the legislature did seals the deal on this? Or would you say there's still some headway to go? I'm talking about specifically this example in Iowa.
Yeah, well, you know, under our federal system, this is a very encouraging development for those states that are in the Eighth Circuit. You know, that's basically Great Plains states. But the rest of the country is wrestling with this. And I'm hoping that they will be looking at the Eighth Circuit for guidance on the ways that they should rule as well. I think the Iowa legislature did a heroic thing. I think really in response to a lot of effort that Advancing American Freedom put on the ground of creating a an army of parents lobbying for over some kind of legislative remedy to this judicial problem. But, you know, we haven't had a decision yet in the First Circuit, which is New England. Haven't had a decision in the 11th Circuit, which is Florida and surrounding states. I don't have a lot of confidence that we will get something good in the 9th Circuit, which is California. So there are lots of things going on. One of the things that we could really use your listeners' help on is identify more school districts that have these policies, because one common trait is these policies are kept secret from parents. And they have a right under a 1978 law signed by Jimmy Carter, of all people, called the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment of 1978. They have a right to ask what their children are being taught and be given examples of the curriculum.
Let me ask you this, Mark, from a process standpoint, because we just kind of pitched it to our audience to help out in whatever way they can. But just broadly speaking, I know it varies by state and varies primarily by state according to FOIA requests, like Freedom of Information Act requests. According to that 1970s law you just mentioned that sets the base for being able to request this type of policy from your local school district, does that necessarily involve a FOIA request, or should you be able to get this policy from your local school district without even a FOIA request?
Correct. It's not a FOIA, but it's a similar statute to the way FOIA was supposed to work. I mean, we've already complained to the House Judiciary Committee that all of our FOIA requests in the Biden administration are going nowhere. There's just a uniform stonewalling.
Wow.
But under the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment of 1978, this applies to any school district. And if you have a child in school, just simply write a letter and say, you know, I'm invoking my rights under the PPRA, and I would like to know if you have a policy like that, and has my child been counseled on a gender transitioning plan? This is very, very important, because if you have a policy that is not flagged for the public, how do you know when the policy says that a child could request of an adult not to tell mom and dad about what I'm going through, and that I want to have a different set of clothes at school. I want to have a different name at school. I want to have different pronouns at school. And that just lays the groundwork for, you know, a later desire by this child to undergo surgery and change the trajectory of their life that cannot be undone.
Yeah, you're exactly right. This is so tragic and really infuriating that we already, Mark, and you know this, your group focuses on this often, but we already have a family crisis in our country with a breakdown of the nuclear family, one man, one woman, with the raising of children as being the best unit, as even the former vice president said in his one of his statements about this Eighth Circuit case. The family unit is the best unit for society and for the advancement of American greatness on the world stage. And here we are undermining it. I mean, we already have a problem with the breakdown of the family, and then the government comes in on top of it and just piles on. Last word.
Right. Well, last word is, what would a family counsel to a child if an adult approached this child and had a conversation of a sexual nature and said, don't tell mom and dad about what we said? Right there, that is a stranger danger situation, and this is being embraced by our schools.
Absolutely. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for coming on the program, bringing this to our attention, and I appreciate your organization's work on this front and multiple others.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate American Family Association as well. And we're glad to work alongside you with this situation.
Absolutely, Mark. Hey, appreciate it, brother. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Mark Wheat, General Counsel at Advancing American Freedom. They're doing great work filing amicus briefs and staying on top of these issues in various states around the country. So that's a victory in Iowa, a victory at the Eighth Circuit, a victory at the state legislature there to fight back against this gender ideology in our K through 12 schools. You know, I heard someone, a good friend of mine, told me this the other day, and I have no reason to doubt it, but I'll have to check it on my own, but I wanted to go ahead and mention it. I'll have to shore it up later, but he was talking about civilizations throughout human history and their primary means or their primary reasons for falling, for destruction. And the issue of human sexuality, he said, is interwoven throughout many of the greatest empires in the world and their falls. This issue of sexual deviancy, this crisis of human sexuality, and the diversion away from a biblical understanding of one man and one woman and the role of man and woman. He was mentioning that when you look throughout history, many nations and powerful kingdoms and empires throughout world history have fallen as partially as a result of a crisis of understanding regarding human sexuality. Hey, thanks so much for joining the Core. We'll see you next time.